Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, everybody. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks. I am Kelly Wells, and I am hosting for Greg tonight. I'm sorry I was a few minutes late here. Wasn't planning that, but my computer had other plans, as it sometimes does. We are going to take a few calls in what seems like a fairly busy week of wrestling news. It's hard to know where to start. Storyline things that happen, but of course, I assume we're going to be talking a little bit about Mandy Rose as well. An interesting week in wrestling that we'll have a lot of questions that maybe don't have to do with wrestling. So going to be interested to hear what you have to say about it. That call, you can call us at 515-605-9345. Cue yourself at #1 if you want to talk to us and be on the show. So let me go ahead and introduce Tom, I think I got the right number here. Was a lot of stuff going on. As I tried to start the show, please tell me you're here.
I believe that I am, and I will be up front right out of the gate. I have been so busy this week between working on prepping my YouTube channel for the new year and both of my kids having pre-Christmas birthdays that I have not watched any wrestling this week. But you know, Kelly, me out in my garden and you out on your walk, that's all the distance this old girl can take without listening to you talk. So I am here to be your Ed McMahon and pretend like I know what I'm talking about, although of course I do have thoughts on the Mandy Rose situation.
I was very moved there, Tom, by what you by that little setup. Hopefully the show can warrant that. I'm going to be honest. Things were going so bad with Skype before I started this show. I was like 80% sure I was going to be met with silence and say, I don't know, guys. I guess I don't have a co-host. But there you get it. There you have it, folks. Tom and I are a package deal. You can find us on VIP. Doing NXT 8 years back, talking about NXT from 8 years ago. Very interesting times with Kevin Owens as the new champion. But let's just go ahead to the phone lines. Let's see what you have got going for us today. We're going to start with 410, followed by 814. I don't have all these numbers written down as Greg would, so sorry about that. But 410, you've been holding the longest. Thanks for waiting. And if you were on, go ahead and say hey.
Happy holidays, gentlemen. This is Reverend Keith in Baltimore.
Okay, I knew this was one of the numbers I knew, but I didn't know which one. Good to talk to you as always, Rev Keith. Good to hear from you, and happy holidays back to you. What do you have for us this week?
I'll leave the Mandy Rose discussion for other callers, but I do want to just say this, that I have a feeling somewhere down the road she will be back. I'll leave it at that. But I want to talk about Sasha Banks. I'm happy that she will be appearing at Wrestle Kingdom on January 4th. I think this will be the beginning of superstardom for her on the independent level. And what I mean by that is that now she's free to maneuver her schedule, her availability to to other promotions, whether it be New Japan Pro Wrestling in this case, or whether it be AEW, which a lot of people are suspecting she may appear on the January 11th show. But I'm just happy for her. You know, she's broken that ceiling because she deserves it. I mean, she's a true star, and she doesn't have to wrestle. You know, she could easily make it in Hollywood. So I'm happy that New Japan has opened up not only their calendar and book for her, but financially, from what it's being reported, I think it's like $100,000 per appearance or something like that. Something in the high rankings. I know Meltzer and Alvarez were talking about that. So it's good for her. What are your thoughts on Sasha Banks appearing for New Japan Pro Wrestling?
Well, certainly very interesting to me as somebody who has not missed any New Japan Pro Wrestling show of any kind, of any level, in the last 6 years now, 6.5 years. So it's weird because Wrestle Kingdom, January 4th, it's can't miss stuff for me, very exciting. But this year's show is not particularly, it's not a card that's really, really grabbing people in comparison to some other years, which is strange because they only have one night this year. Well, there's a second night, it's later, but it's not really, it's not the two-night thing that they were doing in the last couple of years. And so they've really got everything distilled down to one card, which you would think would make it can't miss, but the card itself just lacks in a few ways. But what it lacks for in actual matches, it makes up for in wild intrigue, because we've got Carl Anderson on this show, a WWE guy who is going there basically to drop his championship that he left with. And now we've got Sasha Banks on the show as well. It's very wild. Sasha is somebody that Tom and I have talked about a lot because and of late because of the 8 years back show, her very, very humble beginnings, rough beginnings in the at the outset of her NXT run. I'm glad we're finally getting some clarity on what's going on with her. It just feels like we were twisting in the wind for any kind of information here, and I still think there's a lot more we don't know than what we do. I will comment, and I'm always trying to be fairly nice about this if I can, but I do not believe Sasha could easily make it in Hollywood. I do not believe she can make it in Hollywood with a lot of work because she's not an actress, and I think she'd be laughed out of a casting director's room if she went in there and gave her usual spiel. The Mandalorian didn't ask a lot of her, and I still thought she was a little stiff. I don't know that she could make it in that arena at all, but she is an elite professional wrestler, and I hope that whatever happens, it will have made all this time away from her worth it. Hopefully I'm saying things that Tom hasn't heard, because we've heard each other talk about Sasha Banks quite a bit, Tom.
Yeah, and of course you and I share that opinion of Banks. I think the, you know, any time you try to check up on what's going on with Sasha Banks, the phrase that keeps popping up is Sasha Banks knows her worth, and I think that really is the correct headline of whatever the story happens to be with her at any given time, is that she knows her worth. And even if the company, even if WWE was going to say, okay, come back and we'll give you the money we were giving you before, she knows that she can hold out because she's got enough star power that she's worth it. And she knows that she is a threat to them if she goes somewhere else. She is one of the potential game-changing names for a different company. Now, I would be surprised if her Wrestle Kingdom appearance was anything more than just an appearance. I would be surprised if there was much substance behind it. But what does intrigue me more is that apparently a Stardom appearance has been rolled into this deal or has been added to the deal. So like a potential face-to-face with Kyrie or something along those lines definitely intrigues me as a possibility.
Yes, it's... for anyone who doesn't know, no women show up on New Japan shows in a wrestling capacity in general. But New Japan Pro Wrestling and Stardom are owned by the same parent company, Bushiroad, and so they have started to put a couple of Stardom matches on Wrestle Kingdom every year just to do a little bit of cross-promotion. And just they're easing into... Japan doesn't like to change things. They don't like to make changes to the way they approach the business, but they are kind of doing a couple of crossover shows, and they've been successful, so we'll see where that heads. So what's interesting about where she's appearing is we know where she's appearing next, but we still really don't know what that means. We don't know where that means she ends up, but... But yeah, we agree. Sasha Banks knows her worth. She's, if it's true, and we don't know if this is just what people are spitting out there, if it's true that she just wanted Becky Lynch and Charlotte money and they said she wasn't worth that, that's really, really stupid. She is. She is definitely worth that. She is. I mean, Becky Lynch is a major, major star. But Sasha is worth every penny of that. And I just, I hope that that part of the, of what we'd heard about the negotiations is false, because that's really, really a big miss on their part. Keith, what do you have for us?
Yeah, I disagree with you on the first point that you made, that you, when you said that you didn't think she could make it in Hollywood, I disagree on that end. But I do agree with what you just said, that if the rumors are true, that they wanted to lowball her when she wanted to make as much as Becky and Charlotte. Now, I agree with you on that. That's insulting. And that's what all the other podcasts have said, whether it be Sean Ross Sapp, Wrestling Inc., Meltzer, and Alvarez. They've all said the same thing. That's insulting, because she definitely has the star appeal. And she, you know, she looks better on TV, I think, than Charlotte Flair. And Charlotte's making it, you know, she can wrestle, but she's made it halfway because of her dad. And we all know that, whether we want to admit it or not. Becky became popular because of Ronda Rousey, you know, and the way the fans, you know, took to her during that feud with Ronda, and when leading up to that triple threat match 3 years ago. So where Sasha was already in the mix before she even left NXT, when she had that the two matches against Bayley in NXT before they were even called up. So, you know, opinions vary on that, but that's my thoughts. Now, moving from her, but it pertains to her, she may or may not be Saraya's partner. But if she is not, it's going to be a letdown no matter who the woman is. I could see it being either Thunder Rosa, if she's able to come back in enough time, Toni Storm or Chris Statlander. But right now, Sasha is the forerunner as far as, or the frontrunner as far as the rumors go. But it could be any of those three. What are your thoughts on who this mystery partner for Saraya would be against the Doctor and her and Jamie Hayter?
The thing that makes me not believe it's Sasha is that Saraya has said that it could be Sasha. And it seems like that's kind of the red herring that they throw out there. On the other hand, if they really want to hit, if they really, really want to make a splash with this, then I think it would have to be. I wonder if they are making this big enough that if it's anyone else, it will be a disappointment. And if that's the way that they think this is going, then it'll be hard to do anything but Sasha. If they do have her, and we're going to have to get used to calling her a new name at some point. I don't know if we're going to be calling her Mercedes Vernado, or what we're going to be calling her, but we won't be calling her Sasha Banks if that's where she ends up. Tom, what do you think?
I hope this doesn't sound like my what people would probably define as my anti-AEW bias, although I feel like there's enough a multiplicitous reasoning behind that enough that I think it's I think bias would be incorrect. But I do still understand how it sounds when I say something like this. I think that in knowing her worth, Sasha Banks also knows she's smart enough to know that AEW is small beans compared to, you know, what she could be doing in WWE. I really think that would be a significant step down for her and diminishing of her potential in going to that other company. I do not think that would be a good career move for her. So I personally would not expect it for that reason. But in trying to speculate who it is, I mean, I'm out of tune enough with, I follow the major stories just to try to keep a finger on the pulse because I feel a responsibility to, but I guess I'm removed enough from it, particularly in a week as busy as this one has been for me, that I was not aware of this storyline to even have put any thought whatsoever into who the partner could be, but just hearing it off the cuff right now and not knowing where Statlander is in her recovery, not knowing what Thunder Rosa's status is, I'll just, you know, only hearing what Tony Khan recently commented on regarding the status of her championship and stripping her of it. One thing that I will throw out there, and this is total, is wild card the phrase I want to use? This is perhaps a bit out there, but if the goal is to, if a goal, not necessarily the goal of this storyline, but if an overarching goal in the company is to rehab AEW's image due to a lot of the negative press that they've been getting over the past year plus, or, you know, just some of the negative press they've been getting, build back the bridge with Big Swole. And I think with everything that everybody knows about Big Swole's departure from the company, even the people sitting there hoping that it's Sasha will be pleasantly surprised enough to see Ariel Monroe walking the ramp. I think if I was an AEW fan watching the show, I would be thrilled if that was the case. And being actually me, the opposite of an AEW fan, I think if Big Swole returned to the company, that would raise my eyebrow like, I wonder what conversations happened there. They had to have been positive if Big Swole, you know, with her principles that I believe, decided to sign on the dotted line again and return. So that's what I would personally hope for.
She didn't come to my mind at all. For obvious reasons, but yeah, I will co-sign on. I will steal your idea, Tom. I will shamelessly take that. Keith, if you got one more thought for us, go ahead.
That's interesting, Tom. I tell you, if that happens, then I'll certainly DM you or hit you up on Twitter, and we'll have to discuss that, because that's an interesting variable that you have placed on the table there. It's highly unlikely, but in the world of pro wrestling, anything can happen, sir. Now, moving on, since we were talking about the January 4th Wrestle Kingdom show, I also wanted to point out that in addition to Carl Anderson wrestling Tama Tonga and defending his NEVER Openweight title, you have Sasha making the appearance there. You also have the cross promotion from AEW, because Kenny Omega will be wrestling Will Ospreay, if I'm not mistaken. So this will be a very interesting Wrestle Kingdom show, albeit, like you said, Tom, it's not as high on the totem pole as previous Wrestle Kingdoms. And it's been like that for about 3 to 4 years now since the Elite left the promotion. So what are your overall thoughts on the show itself, and how do you think it will draw numbers-wise?
I think that having Kenny and Will in this match is a massive, massive help as far as what it's going to draw. I don't know that it's going to do what it was doing. Jericho, I know, gave it a pretty big international boost when he did it a couple of years in a row, a few years back. So I don't know if we're going to see numbers like that again. But I think that match gives us a chance. It's weird because Kenny hasn't been on on New Japan TV at all to promote this. And I'm confounded sometimes by the fact that the World Tag League and the Super Junior Tag League take place in December, and they just completely rule all the time that New Japan has to offer, all of their TV. So you really don't get any promotion of somebody like Ospreay, who isn't in a team and wasn't in the tag league. I just don't know why they don't use December for more of a hard sell. They just don't do it. And assume that those matches will kind of sell themselves. And to some degree they will. As far as the card goes, it's definitely a big two-match card. You've got Keiji Muto, the Great Muta's final match in New Japan, and that's a draw as an idea, but he's in his upper 50s. He's not going to put on a banger out there. That's why he's being stashed in a six-man match, and Tetsuya Naito is in that six-man match on the other side, and there are some folks bummed out by that, but Naito is just not wrestling at the level he was a couple of years ago. I'm still surprised they didn't put him in a singles match, but that is the truth of the matter with him. I'm excited about it because Kairi Sane's on it, and because of these top two matches, the one mentioned and Jay White versus Kazuchika Okada. But as a show, it's not... I'll watch it. I'll probably get up in time to watch it live. I'm just, that's what New Japan does for me, but it's just not as hot as it's been in recent years. Tom, I know that you don't watch New Japan, but have you been paying attention to this card, and has wrestling Twitter that you have followed, does it feel like it's hot?
Yeah, as everybody knows, I don't know a show from a yo, so I'm not sure, but I can say subjectively, for whatever little it may be worth, that every single year for the past 4 or 5 years, around this time of year, I start to think, and I've asked you about it multiple times, Kelly, just like, how good is the streaming service? Is this the year that I break down and finally just dive in, because I know that there's going to be, I know that I'll find something to like in this promotion. And is this the year that I finally start following it? And then it's never the year. I still have never started following it. But this year, I have not had that thought at all. It hasn't been on my radar whatsoever. I follow the wrestling news enough that that I hear about them every single day, but I would not have been able to name you a single match on the card, except for the Carl Anderson one, until you guys started talking about some of them. The closest, and this is another thing you and I talked about off air, Kelly, but the closest I've come as to being interested in Japanese wrestling recently was the recent Stardom tournament, particularly the Jazzy versus Kairi match, just because I just adore the both of them. But since Kairi won the tournament, which, I mean, shoo-in, of course, you know, good choice. Who is she wrestling on at Wrestle Kingdom?
I think it's Mayu Iwatani.
That would have been my guess, a rematch there. And that, I mean, my goodness, I guess. Yeah, okay, so there is something that intrigues me, because both of them are absolutely incredible, two of the best wrestlers in the world. So I would love to see that match. Will I see that match? Probably not. But
it's not Iwatani.
The show,
sorry.
That would... Oh,
it's Tam Nakano. I thought that it
still
was going to be, or what happened there. Yeah.
I mean, you know, that'll still be good. So I don't know. Maybe I'll look up highlights on YouTube.
Yeah, there's some other stuff I'm psyched about. There's a four-way for the junior championship, and they do those so right. They don't do them very often, but they do them very right. Zack Sabre Jr. versus Ren Narita for the new TV championship. Very, very excited about that. Ren Narita just came back from excursion, and they're kind of treating him as a Stone Cold Killer, and I like it because I loved him as a young lion, and I love him now. We thank you, Keith, as always. And let me find my
thank you
numbers here. Yeah, thanks, and we'll see you soon. 814, we got you next. So what do you have for us?
My first question is on Scarlett Bordeaux. I saw her make her in-ring debut last week in Wheeling, West Virginia, but I was reading the reports, and looks like Madcap Moss and Emma picked up an upset victory over Cross and Scarlett this week. So is there something going on with Cross and Scarlett as far as, like, being in the doghouse? Because I thought Madcap was pretty down on the totem pole as far as talent goes.
Huh. Well, I could say that, yes, Karrion Kross is definitely far down the totem pole as far as talent goes. But it seems like whatever they were trying with him a few months ago is not happening right now. I watch some WWE. Tom watches just about all of it. Let me throw to him and ask him what the heck's going on.
Yeah, I would just say that very early on in what Kross is doing with Rey Mysterio has been probably some of the best stuff Kross has done on WWE television, and that's including NXT, just because so much of it has not stuck. And we're way too early to judge, but it's been good so far. And as far as the Emma and Madcap mixed tag, I wouldn't put too much stock in that because that was a house show, and you know, the baby faces tend to win, not exclusively, but usually at house shows. So I wouldn't worry about that. But I am optimistic about Scarlett finally getting in a WWE ring, because I was very impressed with her when she wrestled on the indies, and I was always shocked that they never moved her into a wrestling capacity on NXT, because I do believe, at least based on what I saw on the indies, which was a handful of years ago at this point, but if she still has it in her, I was very impressed with her before, so I would hope that would translate to a WWE context.
All right, Ryan, what else do you have?
My second question is on Mandy Rose. Is it true that she can show up anywhere she wants now that because of the situation of how the contract was laid out, she could appear on AEW this week or New Japan Tokyo Dome show, and she doesn't have that 30-day or 90-day clause like a lot of these wrestlers have?
I guess I would be surprised if there isn't something in there that disallows that, but this is such a highly irregular situation. And we knew we'd land here eventually, and here we are. If anyone wants to hear Tom and I find out this news in real time, because we were podcasting at the time on NXT 8 years back on the last episode that went up just a day or two ago, we found that out on the show. And hit us like a ton of bricks, like it did everybody. It was talked about the day before what had gone on, and people were speculating that the match was rushed to have her lose the championship and then fire her the day after. I pushed back against that, and I was completely wrong. I pushed back pretty hard against that and just thought, I think that this was going to be a TV match anyway. And putting it on the next PLE was a red herring. But, alas, she is gone. Tom, do you know the contract situation? Have you seen anything that is better than just rumor?
No, I haven't seen anything that is better than that. And all that I have seen has said that she has a non-compete that is somewhere between 1 month and 90 days, although I would imagine that's a muddy area since she moved to NXT where the non-compete is 1 month from the main roster where it's 90 days. I'm not sure on that particular part of the question.
Okay. I'm sure we'll find our way back to Mandy. Ryan, go ahead.
I have a question on Moxley and the Hangman Adam Page feud. It's part of the reason why they feud is because of Moxley having like an issue with alcohol and Hangman being pretty like a heavy drinker. Like, is that anything to do why this is such a vicious, like they hate each other so much?
Ooh, I hope that they're not stepping too far into reality with that. As one who struggles with alcohol. I don't know that this is something you want to use too much, unless the workers themselves have given the blessing. Getting to John Moxley versus Hangman Page is fairly organic. It was probably going to happen regardless because of where they were on the card. just where they are positioned on the card, how high up the card they are alone would make it inevitable. But the various situation, I don't know. I guess I'm just hoping that they don't make this feud too meta. And I can't trust that they're not going to do that. But I'm hoping that they can keep from going well over the line. I don't know. It would be very interesting to ask them if the drinking angle was a part of this. I will say I hope not. And in another company, I would say I'm sure not. I don't know. I would say that New Japan, at least, maybe. But these carnies, who knows? They're capable of anything, Tom.
Yeah, they are. And, I mean, you even have the petty stuff like the Elite being back and making references to the all-out aftermath brawl on television, which where you'd think it would just be like, okay, there's nothing to accomplish there. Just don't do it. But there they are. And obviously Hangman is adjacent, if not, you know, just totally intermixed with them. So there's probably a shared mentality. And I believe I heard on some podcast somewhere that the alcoholism subject did come up in a promo, but just acknowledging that I think maybe I heard that is as far as I will discuss that there, because I'm not positive, and I certainly didn't hear the promo for myself. But if the question is whether this is something that has caused the men themselves to be at odds backstage, I would certainly hope that at least Moxley is professional enough to not allow that to be a thing. And what would be the opposite of wouldn't put it past? I would put it past Hangman to get involved. I wouldn't think, even with some of the pettiness we've seen from him on air, I wouldn't think that this would be something that would stir him up. And as far as I know, the drinking is just a character thing. I have no idea what libations he partakes of, you know, when he's not on screen. But I think I don't know. I don't think there's anything there in a real way, at least as far as what my perception is. And if my vague recollection that this has come up on air as part of the storyline is correct, then I would argue that that's probably a step too far, and you don't want to use that sort of thing for fodder in a wrestling storyline. But we've seen it from basically every single wrestling company that there is. So I don't know. That's all I got there.
You know, Hangman was a regular fixture on New Japan for a while. And all I can say is that the more I see him and the more Hangman content that I consume, the less I feel like I understand who the real Adam Page is. I just don't know. I will say that when I interviewed when several of us asked him questions at the media scrum after Full Gear, he just seemed like the most respectful, laid back, humble dude. But man, have we seen some, who knows who the Hangman is? Ryan, if you got one more, go ahead.
Okay. Final question. So that our EW question, I don't know if you've heard this report, but supposedly merchandise people are giving people a rough time if they try to buy like a CM Punk shirt. And another odd coincidence, or maybe it's not coincidence, is I guess one of the Bucks' wives runs like the merchandise department in AEW. So have you heard anything about people having issues with getting sort of mocked for buying CM Punk stuff at AEW shows?
I haven't, and I wish that I really felt like this was too dumb a rumor to be true, but the level of pettiness that has come up from this particular feud makes me believe this could be real. I would think that if there's some conflict of interest there, hopefully they would remove that conflict of interest. If somebody was sandbagging the sales of somebody else's merchandise, that then I would think somebody in charge at AEW would step in and do something about it. But you would think that that same person would step in and do something about all the things that CM Punk was saying at the media scrum, but he didn't. So I don't know that that this is something that would be handled properly and in the right amount of time or not. Tom, the stories just, they keep getting stranger.
They sure do. And for as low as my opinion is of AEW and its leadership, and for as many digs as Tony Khan, I know we're not specifically talking about him. We're talking about whichever of the Young Bucks wives here. And I have no idea what her credentials are. Maybe she's an expert at this sort of thing and has tons of experience in it. Seems unlikely. Seems like they just gave a family member a job. But I don't know. But, you know, we've seen Tony Khan take plenty of digs at WWE that he does not need to take. And in the early phases of AEW on television, they basically defined themselves as the company that just takes digs at WWE. This company has no identity other than being anti-WWE, and that's it. So that's the company that we're working with. Even still, I would be shocked if there was some kind of order from or guidance from some kind of leadership saying, oh, you hassle the people that try to buy Punk merch. I would really be surprised if that was a thing. However, the actual employees making comments and moaning and complaining or making little barbs when people buy that merch, sure, I totally buy that because I have a very low opinion of how the company is run. I think it's like a combination of too many and too few cooks in the kitchen, if you know what I mean. And so I think that there are a lot of people who are just left to their own devices, and there probably isn't enough guidance when it comes to these things. Or, I don't know, it's just a culture thing. And, you know, when I used to be more active on Twitter and I would make a comment here or there about what the backstage culture at AEW seems to be, I would get AEW fans in the replies going like, well, you don't know because you're not back there. But we hear enough and we see enough that there are clearly culture issues, business culture issues. And if that ends up manifesting in a merch stand and people hassling customers, it's honestly not the most surprising bit of news that there could be. It seems like, no, that makes sense for my perception of this company and how it attempts to operate.
You know, if there were people there hassling, if there were employees, plants, hassling people not to buy CM Punk shirts, what I would hope is that that's just all part of, like, this little long game where they're really painting CM Punk as this outsider, and it's this reverse psychology thing where they just want to make it seem cool, like you're really, really sticking it to the man. If you do this, if I was going to be real, real generous, that's what I would say was happening. I don't think that's what's happening, but if it was, I think I'd be on board with that. It's at least semi-interesting. I just don't know. I want so badly to be able to be fully on someone's side in that whole situation, but it just feels like a race to the bottom. Like nobody's trying to rise above the situation.
I absolutely agree with you. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And it's just, I not that anybody's asking, but I would be surprised if we ever see Punk in a wrestling ring again. I guess, you know, I probably would have said that before he returned on AEW as well. But I guess if that wacky scenario had some truth to it, then at least it would be their own story. Because I did not watch Punk's return, but, you know, it was one of those things where it was impossible to avoid some of the talking points that he brought up. And one of the things that really stuck with me and got under my skin was that he said, like I didn't walk away from wrestling in 2014. I walked away from wrestling when I signed with WWE, or what, however it was that he phrased it. I don't think he got that explicit with what he meant, but everybody knew what he meant. And what really upset me about that is that he was having this massive, glorious return. The entire event had been built around rumors that he was returning, and he was signing this big contract. And the only reason he's a big enough star to be able to do that is because he became a star in WWE. And he's just writing all of that off. And I was just like, oh, wow, this guy, he's been painted as a hypocrite before for different reasons. But I was just like, oh, my goodness. Like, if he had already lost me over the years, which he had, yeah, no, I'm not coming back anymore, man. You just... It's so self-serving. So self-serving.
You know, you first said that to me in the week. Like, it wasn't on a podcast, but we had this conversation away from the podcast, like a week after he dropped that particular pipe bomb. And it just seems like with the more and more that's happened with his run, and with his situation now, it seems like you were justified from the very beginning. gosh, I just, there's so much to like about the CM Punk act. Oh, I just want, I'm going to try not to think about it and enjoy the days when I just thought he was being underutilized. And I was like, why isn't he a bigger star? Well, he made it, but never look a gift horse. I don't know if that was, you know, there's a cliche for this. I'm not going to search for it. I'm just going to go to the next caller. 240, thank you for holding. Who are you, and what's on your mind?
Good evening, gentlemen. This is Steve from Bowie, Maryland, completing the Maryland hat trick of callers.
Wow. 3 for 3, yes.
Yeah. Baltimore, Cumberland, and now suburban D.C. It's been a while since I called. This is we've interacted a bunch. Going back, my first question is going back to New Japan. We were talking about how there's no real buzz for the card, but my focus is going to be on the title scene. Does it seem a little stale to you that it's been the same 3 or 4 or 5 guys over and over? Okada, Jay White, a little bit of Naito, and then we had Takagi for a little while. But who are they setting up to be the next wave of challengers? I thought Tonga had a good G1, but is it going to be somebody like him?
This is, oh boy, I think about this question all the time, so I'm mighty glad you asked it, so I had an excuse to talk about it. Tonga is one of those guys who had such an awesome year and has had a couple of good G1s in a row. I would love to see him elevated to that point. Now, last year they gave him a couple of championship matches against, I think it was Okada at the time, because Okada won the G1, but Tama Tonga beat him in the G1 during the tournament. So they gave him a couple of shots, and he wasn't going to be in that main event spot. And nobody thought he was going to win those, but it was proof that he could hang there. And he's had singles matches. I liked him in singles matches all the way back to 2016, but what he's doing now is just really next level stuff. And I would love to see him in that spot. But it just seems like New Japan, once they've gotten used to where a guy is, they have such a hard time pulling the trigger on elevating somebody. And they elevated Evil, and they did that all in a very weird way. And now Evil's not even on the card. He'll be in that pre-show Rambo, but that's all he's got. Shingo Takagi, it is just cruel if he gets left off this card, although there are some rumblings there. He was just having some of my favorite matches I've ever seen. So I'd like to see that as well. But he's not real young. He got to the main event scene as an older guy. So I'm okay with if they want to keep him at the King of Pro Wrestling level, I suppose I can live with it, but I just better be able to see some real, real long matches from him every year in the G1. As for who's coming up now, I think Shota Umino is probably going to be high up the card. I think he's going to be a spiritual successor to Hiroshi Tanahashi. I think he will be kind of a slightly rougher, slightly meaner version. I also hope they're doing this with Ren Narita. I am a massive, massive fan of Ren Narita. I was a huge fan of Shibata, and they're not even pretending that they're doing anything different with Narita. They're just presenting him as a younger Shibata because Shibata can't do a full-time wrestling schedule anymore. I don't know what level they're going to put him at because he hasn't lost in the company yet, but they've just got him in that TV championship tournament, and we don't know yet because we haven't had a first champion where they think that championship is on in the pecking order. So I think those two guys, it seemed like Jeff Cobb was going to be pushed to that level, but they've cooled off from that for some reason. He didn't win his block in this year's G1, and he got very close last year and not as close this year. But I would say those two guys, Umino and Narita, are near locks to be at least pretty far up the card. Umino really looks like the kind of person they like to present as a babyface champion. So even though I prefer Narita, I think that the long reigns and the possible future ace is more likely to be Umino. And not entirely sure what the situation is with Yuya Uemura, but I wouldn't write him off as a potential main eventer as well. And I will allow Tom to skip this one because he doesn't know the name that I'm talking about. So go ahead.
You are correct, sir.
Okay, and following up back on when I was listening Wednesday afternoon after the PWT Talks NXT show dropped, and having heard the news, it was kind of an awkward listen because you would listen to what you and Nate were talking about and then finding out and knowing why it wasn't going to happen. But my question is more about in NXT, what change do you see in the future for the other two members of Toxic Attraction, Gigi Dolan and JC Jane? What are they without Mandy Rose?
I think Gigi is still fairly decent without Mandy Rose. JC definitely needs she's fine in the ring. She's gotten to the point where she's fine in the ring. She's uneven, to put it lightly, on the mic. Gigi's a little more stable on the mic. She's better than JC is. But she's not a dynamo. I think everyone's kind of expecting for somebody else to take the reins in this group. If they wanted to do this with Tiffany Stratton, they certainly could once she gets back to TV. I had heard it bandied about that Chelsea Green could be brought back for this. Character-wise, I get it. Wrestling-wise, no thanks. Those would be the names that would be the most obvious, unless they just wanted to either rebrand somebody on the main roster or just give them something new to do and have them be the new leader of this group. There are probably other names possible, especially among those women who have not gotten a lot of TV time yet, which is a perfect time to throw to Tom Stout.
Yeah, I mean, I'm forever glad that you and I share that opinion of Chelsea Green, but I don't know, I guess if there had to be a new leader, I would say maybe bring Sonya Deville back, because that just seems to make the most organic sense, and she's already been involved in, with them in a cameo role. But honestly, I feel like, going back to the original question, I feel like JC and Gigi are at a point where they don't need a third. They don't need a leader. And I mean, yes, it was a house show in Fort Pierce on Friday, two days later after Mandy's release, but they wrestled a match and they were still introduced as Toxic Attraction. I feel like even though there's baggage on the name now, and most, I believe anyway, I believe the majority of fans are against the Mandy Rose release, as am I, which I can only imagine we'll end up discussing that at some point in more depth. I think it's going to come down to crowd reaction. Like, how is the crowd going to react to seeing the Toxic Attraction entrance when JC and Gigi come out? And, I think that that crowd that's there is, if not entirely, at least more than a year ago, back to the way that the crowd was, you know, 8-9 years ago when it was just like, even if the gimmick is silly, we want to support these people because we believe in what NXT is doing and we want to be in on the journey before it hits national television. Of course, you know, now NXT is national television, but it's still a smaller audience. And I feel like the live fans would support it. I feel like it wouldn't get the wrong kind of heat from still having the name that was associated with Mandy Rose. And, you know, just trying to think of other people who are in the pipeline who could fill the spot. The first person that comes to mind, just based on gimmick and talent level, is Ariana Grace, but, you know, she's rehabbing an injury right now, so that timing-wise would not work.
Yeah, it's and I had heard the DeVille angle as well, and it was less obvious to me for some reason, but when I start to think about the fact that they had the tiny bit of history, and she and Mandy Rose are close, that could be as well. Yeah, it's going to be real, real interesting to see on Tuesday how they present Toxic Attraction, or actually if they present Toxic Attraction. I think I'd be semi-surprised to see them on the first show after Mandy's firing, because that will give the crowd a reason to bring it up. I wouldn't be surprised if the crowd chants for her anyway. Go ahead.
It was already taped, and it's
that's
possible.
Right.
I'm not positive, but it's possible they also taped the next week television as well. I did not look at any reports, but they've got stuff in the can right now, so it's kind of like a two dimes situation.
Right. Was the stuff? What's the timeline of the taping? Do you know the taping versus the firing?
You know what? Oh man, you're right. The firing happened the morning of the second part of the taping, because it was a 2-night taping. So she was released and then they taped the next weeks of television. Thank you for jogging my memory on that.
Yeah, so, oh boy. You know, it'd be great if it happened during the taping, during a match, and everybody saw it on their phones, and then they start cheering for Mandy in real time. Yeah, speaking of thinking it was awkward to listen to us talk about it when we were misinformed on the situation, think about how awkward it was to know that I had just actually put that in the can, and that it was going to – that show didn't even drop until it was old news. Oh, boy, oh, boy. You win a few, you lose a few. Steve, go ahead if you got another one.
Yeah, one last thing. I want to know, some of the debate has been going on about whether or not there's a double standard in WWE in terms of Mandy being let go for what she did vis-a-vis and the current example being used is Matt Riddle, his second wellness violation, but still being kept on, suspended, but kept on.
Well, I certainly knew that we would land here. I got a big series of coughs coming on, so that gives me a chance to throw to Tom first, but I will definitely pick this up right after. Tom, go ahead.
Boy, this does get really, really meaty, and I will put out there, unless there's something I've missed, I will put out there that I don't think we know what Riddle got snagged for, because we're pretty sure that the company's okay with marijuana now. Somebody stop me if I'm incorrect there. So I don't know. It might be a prescription thing like happened to Eva Marie. It might be, a performance-enhancing thing. It might not necessarily be narcotics of some variety. But if that news is out there and I've missed it, then that's my bad. It's difficult to get the exact phrasing down. I was actually, and I probably won't end up putting out the version of this that I have written down, but I basically wrote like an essay to myself the Wednesday night because I had so many thoughts swirling through my head, and I was like, maybe I'll talk about this on Bonus Point. I don't know. And that version of it probably won't go out, but even in written form, which is usually the form that I am better in, which is weird because I primarily podcast, but written form is where I feel I excel. Even there, it was difficult to come up with the exact right phrasing for how I feel about this, because you can look at something like, I think one of the more, it's not really analogous, but I feel one of the other things that leaps out at me more than the Matt Riddle situation, just because it's concurrent, is the Velveteen Dream situation, because they were allegedly investigating, and it really seems to be like, we're not in the company, we don't know, but it really seemed like, okay, the dude's at the end of his rope, and you're still holding on, you're still struggling to conceal your resentment when you get asked about it, and they really wanted to wait and wait and wait until they couldn't wait anymore. And now, for a different concurrent situation, you've got next-in-line athlete AJ Ferrari, who just 2 weeks ago, on December 6th, I believe it was arraigned on charges of sexual battery due to probable cause. Now, do I hope AJ Ferrari is innocent? Of course. Of course I hope that that didn't actually happen and that he's not guilty. But he was arraigned due to probable cause, and WWE has not commented on the situation at all. The Next in Line program is designed with built-in churn. Most of the athletes, the college athletes that they signed to this program, are not going to sign to become WWE trainees, but that's okay with Triple H because he's addressed this in multiple interviews. Even if they don't, these college athletes have their own levels of exposure and their own multiple millions of followers on social media. So even getting just a few WWE mentions in their social media feeds it exposes the brand, exposes the WWE brand to different audiences. Like, for example, the Cavender twins interviewing Liv Morgan on their recent podcast episode, the second Twin Talk episode. That's the kind of marketing that is really what WWE is getting out of the Next in Line program, apart from, the occasional signee like Tank Ledger or I haven't memorized his working name yet, but Isaac Adugbison, the other Next in Line athlete who has signed. But AJ Ferrari, when you Google his name, what comes up? The headline reads, Next in Line, WWE, Next in Line signee AJ Ferrari arraigned on charges of sexual battery. And that is the kind of story that WWE is trying to get ahead of, or was trying to get ahead of, with the Mandy Rose situation. You can't blame what has become a family-friendly company for trying to get ahead of news before it becomes news that's going to reflect poorly on them and possibly cause issues with sponsors. But they acted so immediately on it before anybody knew it was a thing except for her subscribers. I mean, you know, live on, not live, but, you know, like as we were recording on NXT 8 years back, like I was, and admittedly there was some confusion, as you can hear in that recording, as to exactly what subscription service I was supposed to be looking for, because I was looking for one that was not the one. It turned out to not be the one in question. But, like, you compare it to the China situation going posthumously into the Hall of Fame. They did not want to individually honor her because with the reputation that the company is trying to have now, after, you know, a lot of people are out there trying to compare this to the days where they would promote their wrestlers posing in Playboy. This is not that company anymore, so we can't make that comparison. But with the new company that they were trying to be, and it's even evolved past that now, since it's not Vince's company anymore in many respects, even though, you know, still majority shareholder, they did not want to individually honor China, because if you Google her name, adult material, explicit material comes up, and they did not want that happening with a family-friendly product where children might be Googling this name. However, I was going out of my way to try to figure out what in the world is this material that Mandy Rose is putting out there, and even when I was trying to find it, I couldn't find it. So
yep.
It seems like such a ridiculous overreaction, and as I was writing that essay to myself, I was trying to make comparisons to the Seth Rollins situation, to the Charlotte situation, Paige, Tony Storm, all these people who have had this material leak that was never intended for, I guess public is not the correct word because this was an exclusive subscription, but, you know, it was never intended for people other than, you know, those people named and their intimate partners that they were sharing it with to see. But it leaked out there against their will, and WWE was totally on their side and, you know, and saw it through. But in this situation, and this is really what it comes down to for me, I think, is that Mandy Rose, I think some people might argue that she was, I haven't seen this account. I haven't seen this material. I don't know what it is or isn't, but I you know, in my searches, I saw that she was probably, she was apparently using her working name rather than Amanda Sachs or whatever her actual, you know, she was apparently using Mandy Rose, so she was using the company name. And, yeah, putting out a certain level of explicit material. But here, this, I think, is what the moral of the story is for me at this point. It's really just unfortunate that, like, a string of cloth is what makes the difference. Because if you look at any of these other people, whether they've become names on television yet or not, like you know, Lola Vice, the you know, Valerie Lareda, or you know, Danny Palmer, or any of these names who I'm tracking on Bonus Point, up to someone like, you know, Cora Jade, who's in the NXT Championship picture, or, you know, Nikita Lyons, and they openly promote her sexuality just like they did, or in a sexual manner just like they did with Mandy Rose. There were several weeks there where they used close-ups of Mandy's cleavage to sell NXT television. That was the main draw. Tune in and you'll get to see Mandy's cleavage. And these wrestlers, not just women, Zion Quinn, coming out of the shower, wearing just a towel, gyrating on camera on Instagram. And not only are they putting it out there in their free feeds, but they're also monetizing it behind Instagram subscriptions and perhaps other subscriptions that I'm not aware of, but in particular, Instagram subscriptions, which is something that I've been tracking. And it's just sad that, you know, Valerie Lareda, Lola Vice, can monetize on Instagram photographs of her in the tiniest thong imaginable, and Mandy Rose can put out extremely similar material minus that tiny little string of fabric that wouldn't even register on a scale if you dropped it on a scale, and that's the difference. So that's, I guess, like a larger society point. And if it sounds like I'm villainizing the people who are posing this way, that's absolutely not the point. I'm fully in support of everything all the people mentioned are doing. And it's just sad that because Mandy didn't have the string of fabric, that's what makes the difference. So that's where my mind is on that whole situation.
Yeah, I feel very similarly, and it's a greater societal point, but I don't understand why we're all so scared of this anyway, in this country especially. I don't know. Given that these are the societal norms and these are the expectations, and WWE is what it is and is what it's trying to be anyway, the fairly coded and guarded language they use seems to suggest that they wrestled with what to do. We heard in a couple of different ways that WWE felt like they were in a tough spot, a really difficult spot. If they were in a spot where it just seemed like there was so much gray area, maybe just suspending that person, or not even suspending them, but taking them off TV, calling it a creative decision because they didn't have anything for her in the wake of the championship loss, and then assessing the situation and really figuring out what they want their verbiage to be on this, what they want the rules of this kind of outside monetization to be. It's hard not to get hung up. Like, I know what she did. I kind of know what she did. Like Tom, I tried to look for it because I felt like I should have something to say about the specific content. And I'm like, I can't believe I have to look at something of this of this type, looking over my shoulder in my own home, in order to talk about wrestling. But it did seem like that kind of situation. But it just seems like if you have to search that much, then maybe it was locked down just fine. And I didn't find it. I did hear from someone who did that they said, yeah, it's basically softcore porn. But I don't know what that means because I don't know what that person thinks is basically softcore porn.
Right.
Yes, we all define this differently, especially in a country that is more hung up on this type of content than most other countries. It is very hard to not get hung up on the, like, this is a very surface level, very superficial take, but it's not wrong to say that the company that monetized the hell out of her sexuality probably shouldn't be able to use a morality clause to fire somebody that they used in the way that she was using herself. We probably won't get to know the full verbiage that was in the contract. We don't know. I don't know if we'll know exactly what they think they were firing her for. I think most of that's going to be very guarded and we're not going to get a full explanation. I don't know if Mandy will get a full explanation that is true and honest or whatever it is. I understand why WWE felt the need to take some sort of action, finding out the level of what the content was and everything like that. But I just wonder how much regret there is, how much of a difficult choice this was for everybody in the room. For Mandy's part, it seems like she's taken it more or less like a champ. We don't know how she really feels, but she has said things that make it suggest, like, hey, I'm still out there. My page is still up. Fans, go find it. She has seemingly just completely landed on her feet. And why wouldn't she? She's making more money doing that than she is wrestling. And in wrestling, you get hurt. I mean, you can get hurt in – let's not go down that road.
Oh, my goodness. Part of the reason why I don't expect some of these next-in-line athletes to sign, because through the name and image likeness thing, they're already making so much money. It's like, okay, why would you want to go start taking bumps then? On the subject of double standards, since that was the original question, This is also kind of a question in case you or Steve recall. And I said what I said about the company still evolving past the point that it was at, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But I believe one of the co-CEO's justification, Stephanie McMahon and Nick Khan's justification for this, is that some of the material was allegedly captured on company property during company time, which part of my point here is that so is a lot of the other stuff that I was referring to that gets shared, like Cora Jade recently posting a very suggestive pose that was taken by official WWE photographers, on a white backdrop at the Performance Center. And again, to be clear, I'm totally fine with people doing that. It's just, you know, the only difference is just like a string of fabric here. And backstage photographs in gear. Again, Valerie Lareda is an excellent example because she, part of what she was known for in MMA, in Bellator, was flaunting her body and doing sexy dances. And that very much is showing up in her taunting in the house show matches that she's had and in the very revealing gear that she's been wrestling in. And she takes selfies and posts them online from the locker room. That's company, it's just the difference of fabric. But getting to my question, if part of the justification is that she was doing this on company time, on company property, before Up, Up, Down, Down became swept under the WWE umbrella, was that not being filmed backstage in locker rooms at shows? Genuine question, because I've never watched it, but was that not what was happening with that? And how is that not the same thing?
I only watched one, and it looked like it was filmed in a hotel room. But that doesn't mean they didn't ever.
Right. Yeah, I think there are various locations. I think some of them have been – I know that some of them have been in the locker room at various shows, but what I don't know is where that falls on the timeline with Up, Up, Down, Down being its own entity versus being a WWE shoulder content thing.
Yeah, I was working my way back to Double Standards, I promise. While I was talking, I was like, what was the framing of this? And then I realized where it was. And actually, before I had to throw to you, because of the coughing, which is threatening me again, Velveteen Dream is somebody I was going to bring up. And while you were talking, I was just thinking about, I was on those media calls with Triple H when he was doing those, when he was running NXT. I was on those calls, and he would get calls about Velveteen Dream, and you could tell he didn't want to, but you knew that the first or second question was going to be about Dream for a couple of shows. And it was always very guarded and very, he said, we investigated, we didn't find what we were looking for. And it was clearly a choice that they made, that he was going to say to that question, we didn't find what we were looking for, several times. So I'm sure he didn't have a whole lot of choice in the matter to be only that transparent about it. That was probably a room full of people that said, this is the company line. This is what you say to this question. But like everyone knew what was going on. Like it wasn't even hidden what was out there and the kind of things he was doing and the age of the people he was talking to. And they're still trying to make something out of him because he could work, because he was a good performer. It was just so unbelievable. Like I get that Dream is a way, way better worker than Mandy Rose, but that doesn't matter at all because you wanted both of them to be stars. You got them both in a position to be that. And the one who did what I think most people would agree is the far, far worst thing was not let go immediately. There was an investigation. And I actually just did air quotes because I don't know what that investigation really was or how much it really was there. But it was so bizarre knowing that he was still on the roster, forgetting about him because they couldn't put him in any major matches, any major storylines that were week to week to week because people were just so – they had turned on him so badly. The only thing they could do with him was have him set up a feud match in early on in the episode and then lose on that same episode just so he wasn't going to be promoted for a full week. It would just be within the framework of that one episode. And all the while, we're just like,
against
how
Adam
are they
Cole,
just not...
Right?
Yes, at least once against Adam Cole. That is the only one that I was remembering, but I know that they did that a few times. And I just don't understand how they didn't cut bait. And then they turned him heel to act like they had control over... Like, that heel turn was almost more maddening to me than any other part of the situation, other than, you know, the thing he did. It was so frustrating to me that they just turned him heel to lean into that and to pretend it was heat. God, we all knew how good he was. They didn't. And I guess we do have to mention also here that Vince was in control of that. And Paul is in control of what's happening now. So I don't know who all was in on that situation and the decision with Velveteen Dream. But I guess we do have to consider that different people are in charge. Even considering that, these are not the same transgression, and they are not close to the same transgression. Like, I don't think any reasonable person would say that Mandy Rose went anywhere near the line that that Dream did. So, yeah, there is – I think we can probably safely say that at every point in the history of professional wrestling, there has been a double standard and guys have gotten away with more than girls. I think that it would be very, very fair to say that. But now that we've seen this, the next time something even on the same spectrum happens with a dude under Triple H leadership, there will be a big moment of reckoning, and they will have to decide what to do. And hopefully they don't perpetuate that very same double standard. Tom, let me throw it to you if you've got any more on this.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to learn more if there is more to learn. I think, of course, while agreeing with everything you said, I still would, just for my own understanding of the situation, appreciate more clarity on exactly whom was involved. Like you mentioned, Vince still being in charge of WWE during the Velveteen Dream situation, and I would be shocked if he actually had any fingerprints on that at all. He was probably aware that John Cena had endorsed Velveteen Dream, but I think Vince was just so hands-off with NXT there that I would put that as a Paul Levesque thing. Whereas with the Mandy thing, it really seems from what we've heard that, yes, while Triple H is in charge of so much now and a lot regarding talent, it seems like all the reporting is just surrounding this being something that Matt Bloom found out about. He alerted the co-CEOs, Stephanie and Nick Khan, and that the decision came from them. So I'm not sure how much we can really draw the Velveteen Dream parallel there, even though I was the one who first brought it up, just with Triple H's leadership. Although, you know, he is a big cheese and was to a certain extent then as well. So there probably are some comparisons. Yeah, I mean, I was one of those conference calls was one of the ones that I covered for you after TakeOver 30. And that was the one where Jason Powell was called upon first to not at the beginning, but he was called upon before anybody else had gotten to that. And he was like, hey, you know, we want to know more about the Velveteen Dream situation. And I can only speak for myself, although I would imagine that it was the same case with many of the other journalists on the call, that we were happily scratching off that question because, of course, one of us was going to ask. It was just a matter of who had it on their priority sheet to ask that got called first. And I was like, okay, I don't have to be the one to do that. But, of course, all due respect to Powell for the integrity in following that. And the quote, as I have it, is this, am I looking at? Yeah, this is the way that I transcribed it, although Wade Keller did his own transcription of the audio that I sent to him, and he included all the ums and ahs. I edited them out. Triple H's response to Powell was, I think we've talked about this. We've said our piece on it. I understand people's positions and their feelings of something that they really are just seeing accusations online. So I feel like there's nothing that needs to be said more on it. And again, that's it. And that was all that he said on the matter. When he says we've said our piece on it, he's referring to prior conference calls and an interview that he did with CBS Sports where he said, like, yeah, we've investigated to the extent we didn't find what we were looking for. And the only reason he's been off TV is because he was in a car accident. So there's all that.
Yes, I do remember that that now. And hearing you say it as you read it really made it clear that that those words were written verbatim. And he just had to regurgitate that. Oh, boy. It's wrestling. Wrestling, I tells you. What is this thing that we like? So, yeah, I don't have any emails. No mailbag here, because normally when this happens, Greg would forward me emails. He either didn't have any or didn't think to send them along before he headed off to his vacation. So I don't have any of those. Tom, is there anything specific you want to talk about? Gunther and Ricochet beating the hell out of each other. Anything specific?
You know, when I go back and catch up on what I missed from the week, that'll definitely be the first thing that I click on. I'm sure that it was a heck of a match. I saw the finish posted online by, you know, whatever WWE account it was. And yeah, it looks like it's the Gunther and Ricochet match that we all would have hoped for. Beyond that, yeah, really nothing. I think, you know, with as busy as my week has been, the only thing I really wanted to sink my teeth into tonight was the Mandy Rose situation. And I believe I said everything I want to say on the matter. That's, you know, my whole spiel on it earlier was really everything that's been on my mind. You know, just if what she was doing, and I understand it's in the context of a family-friendly company that has sponsors they need to keep happy. But this is something that's become kind of the norm. Like, it's so much of the norm that it's, I don't know, like every, so many people, like that you just pass in the street shopping at the grocery store have OnlyFans pages. And they may not be in the top whatever percent of all accounts, however they phrase that. But it's so the norm now that people have these exclusive subscription accounts where some of the material is going to be spicy. That they're trying to, you know, a side hustle, you know, they're trying to make the extra money. Times are tough, and people look to, like, well, what are my resources? Oh, well, I have this body and I have this smartphone that is internet connected and has a nice camera. So those are my resources. Let me set up this account. And so many people are doing it to the point where now it's like an ultra competitive market that's really hard to rise to the top of. So it's that because of those things, it's that much harder to find anything in Mandy Rose's actions to blame. While understanding the elements that I have mentioned about the company side of things, I really just do feel like it was way too extreme of a measure to take, and that it probably should have been something more akin to a very serious talking to, and basically that was maybe like a warning, like, hey, here are the steps that we now want you to take. And you know, don't, and if we find that you've continued this, then we'll have some consequences. But just immediately bringing down the hammer like that really, you know, if anybody out there is listening to me on Wade's post shows and whatnot, I tend to side with WWE's company line quite a bit. And this really was something that was just like, oh man, no, that's way too far, WWE, way too far.
Steve said that he thought at some point Mandy Rose will be back. I would amend that to say if she bothers to go back to wrestling.
Yeah, I think she's got a future as a model. I think that's my prediction.
Yeah, I just don't know.
And that's not to say anything of her work. I thought that she had an excellent run in her return to NXT. I enjoyed watching her matches.
I did not, mostly. But I think it's a testament to both of us that we didn't bring that up. Like, that wasn't part of the right or wrong in this situation at all. It doesn't change anything. She certainly improved. Not to where I was like, I like seeing her every week. It was never that for me. But she was better than she had been. She was done such a disservice being rushed through the first time. A lot of people were, especially women, were rushed way faster because Vince just wanted them up there. And their careers suffered for it. I think Liv Morgan's early call-up reverberated and had a negative effect on her for a very long time. It perhaps still does.
The worst call-up ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Or EC3, because there's no right time. anyone who's listened to me on our show will not be surprised by that. I do mean it, folks. Okay, I think that's it on Mandy. If she wants to get back into it, good for her. If not, I think she's going to be all right. Now, it's true that when public figures exit that part of their public life, there is a waning interest in their other content, in their saucy stuff, the spicy stuff, Tom. I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm a weird person. So we'll see if that stuff starts to dissipate. Somebody suggested she was probably making over $500,000 a year from this content. She wasn't making that in NXT. I don't think she was making that doing this either, but I think she's going to be good. She's going to be fine. So I guess that is our show. We talked about what I would have saved for the end and said, you guys are not getting out of this without hearing me talk about New Japan. Then we got like three questions about it. High five to our friends in Baltimore. All our friends, all in the Baltimore area. Many high fives to you. We basically did an episode of The Wire here, spending so much time in Baltimore. And we thank you for it. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games, Tom.
Oh, yes, sir. I am Tom Stoup and stumbled over my own name as I was second-guessing my Ed McMahon impression in the back of my mind. I hope that people are listening to Bonus Point. I think, to be completely honest, I think I do a pretty good job with it, and I think that it is a very informative monthly show tracking WWE developmental pre-NXT television talent and like tryouts and house shows and how people are doing and little news items and things like that. And I think it dives into stuff that really not many people out there in the wrestling world are discussing, but it's stuff that I think that listeners to Torch VIP will be very happy that they are aware of when handfuls of these wrestlers end up debuting on NXT and perhaps having very successful careers in WWE or elsewhere. I think it's a good show and a nice little bonus point at the end of each month.
And I can promise you it is a good show. I have heard almost every episode, but I am behind. So I will change that also. So there you go. Thanks for being VIP, folks, if you are. And if you're not, I mean, come on. Come on. So there it is. That is our show. Because if it is Sunday, it must be wrestling night in America. Cheers, Forks. I think I said cheers, Forks. I think that's what came out of me. But what are you going to do?